This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. In the week when Fulham became the first English side for 88 years to score six or more goals in three consecutive matches, a feat last achieved by Chester City in the 1933-34 season. And on this week's episode, in Skybet League One, a manager who seems to have turned the tide.
We've gone right to the bottom of the loop-de-loop, if you like, and we're climbing back up the top.
And in Skybet League Two, another who's pushing for promotion a long, long way from home.
Clem, my dream was to have a face like an old leather wallet, mate. Live six months of the year in England in the sunshine and 6 months of the year in Australia.
It's the official EFL podcast. Into Skybet League One, where three wins in their past six games after just two in their first 20 have raised hopes that crew Alexandra can yet survive, giving us the perfect opportunity to speak to their manager, David Artill, who's just celebrated 5 years, David. 5 years in charge. So here's what I want to know. How does David Artill in January 2022 look back at David Artill in January 2017? How's he changed?
I think I was a lot younger back then, not just 5 years younger. I think it's probably about 20 years younger. I think any manager should do a 5 year stint, they should be proud of it, and I certainly am. I think everyone said it's a roller coaster ride, it certainly has been. This season alone is you're on the big, you know, big dipper, and you've got the ups and downs. But where we started from was we've gone right to the bottom of the loop-de-loop, if you like, and we're climbing back up the top, and we're making progress, and we've got to keep making progress because of the start of the season we had, which is manufactured by us, if you like. It's our business model. Also, the timings weren't great. You know, we had four players leave in August, you know, four players who would start the season. So anyone who's... most clubs in that situation would struggle, and we, given our resources, would definitely struggle. However, we've stuck with them, we've tried to coach them and as best we could, and I think we're starting to reap the rewards, and we're hoping that between now and the end of the season that progress continues so that we do keep winning games of football.
If anybody's joining us and perhaps hasn't had a full look into Crew Alexandra this season, I think I'm right in saying, David, 8 of your starting lineup last weekend were academy graduates. 13 of the squad were as well. And obviously, what David's alluding to is the fact that every so often a Perry NG or a Harry Pickering is sold in order to balance the books. So, is it inevitable that your football club, on that basis, will have these periods from time to time where there is a bit of a dearth between maximising the sale of a player that you have brought from scratch, but maybe there isn't a ready-made replacement ready to go?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. I think the brilliant thing about our football club is that the owner knows it, the board of directors knows it, and the fans know it. Don't get me wrong, we're trying very hard to make sure that our cycle isn't every 4 years, is every 2 years, and then hopefully never happens at all. And we've got ready-made replacements, but that's not the situation we are in at the minute. And, you know, I said it in the summer, we had a promotion season on the pitch a couple of years ago, and we've just had a promotion season in the boardroom. And they are both equally important to the football club, and to me, and to the chairman, because it keeps us all in a job, and it keeps the community asset that is the football club not just surviving but thriving as well. And that's the chairman's main aim, and I understand that, and I go along with that. That's why I agreed to sell all the players, and we knew what was coming. So, you know, I think that when you are on the same page, and like I said, that includes the fans, then you have to sort of take the rough with the smooth. And we've had a rough 3 or 4 months, but I do genuinely believe that there's light at the end of the tunnel, you know, which I suppose has been borne out in the last few weeks and the results that we've had.
Yeah. Do you want to just explain the promotion in the boardroom bit? This is the sort of change of shareholding, new investors coming on board?
Yeah, I think, well, there's obviously that. That happened a month before football stopped the first time round. So that was a baptism of the fire for all the new guys. But then, you know, the football club is a development football club that develops players and sells them on. And when you've had our players for 4 or 5 years and we took them literally from third, fourth, fifth bottom of League Two to mid-table in League One and given them 100 games and gone grey and tore your hair out as a manager, but got a promotion off the back of it. And then they all go on. You know, like I say, we've sold Harry to Blackburn, Perry to Cardiff, Ryan Wintle to Cardiff, Owendale to Blackpool, Charlie to Charlton. They're all going to big clubs and most of them in a higher league. But then on the back of that, you lose people like Omar Beckles for a lot more money to Leighton Orient. So that you're literally starting again from scratch in probably the most competitive League One that there's been for 10, 12, 15 years. It's not easy to do. So that's the sort of, that's what I mean when I said the boardroom has a promotion. I'm not saying that with any malice or there's no context to it. It's just my words of how we survive and how we operate as a football club and as a business. And I fully agree with how that should be run. I think all football clubs should be run in this manner. Then you wouldn't see the demise of Bury, for example, or Derby's current financial situation. I think it's responsible, and I think it's the right way to protect a community asset. Every now and again, though, you might have blips like we have, but we're realistic, we're pragmatic, but we're also fighting, and we're also developing, and we're also trying to get ourselves out of it to remain a League One club, and that's what we'll do.
Yeah, to hear the words supporters are in on it as well. I mean, you know what supporter expectations are like. You can be in the bottom division for your entire existence, suddenly go through the divisions, I don't know, hit the championship and then come tumbling back down and everybody sees the club as a sort of championship club in all but name. I mean, it takes some doing to align all those different parties, does it not?
Yeah, it does. I think, this kind of thing doesn't happen overnight. I've said it numerous times, our fans are extremely knowledgeable about what we are as a football club, and that helps. There's no getting around that. It really does help. It helps the chairman, it helps me, it helps the players. And that's not to try and, you know, telling them to be apathetic or unambitious. That's not what my words mean. It just means we're all, I believe, is on the same page as any football club can be. You know, so I just go, well, whilst that's credit to the football club and the fans for understanding and the clear messages that we send out so that we can all progress as one, and you're a far stronger force when that happens. So, you know, I'm sure fans have been calling for my head because of the current situation, but then the majority of fans understand that what we're doing and where we are and how we've come about this situation is born out of the fact that that's the business model of the football club, and that makes it sustainable. So they'll turn up in 1 week, 1 month, 1 year, 10 years' time, because it'll still be there.
If we were doing this chat 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, would I be chatting to a very different bloke, a bloke that had been searching for answers, a bloke that was, you know, struggling more than the relaxed persona you're presenting to us now?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I saw an interview with Nigel Clough, and I can't remember who it was with. I don't know if you did it with him, actually. And he was saying he's won 8 out of 9, and he hadn't won sort of for 12 before that. And he said, what changed? And he went, nothing.
Was it our podcast you were listening to? We had him on a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, it was. It was. I thought it was you. And it was your dulcet tones and Nigel Clough's, you know.
Thanks for your interest and your attention to detail.
So I listen to that many podcasts in the car. It just gets jumbled up.
Glenn. It's nice to know you listen to the official EFL podcast. I can see the cogs whirring in producer Dave's eyes right now as he thinks of using your fine testimonial to promote the brand going forward. Please continue, caller.
I do listen, honestly, I do. And he was saying, you know, you asked him what's changed, and he said nothing. And we haven't changed in that sense. We've just stuck to our principles, and that sort of utmost belief in what you're doing and the players themselves. You've got to. There's no point either trying to kid yourself on or trying to kid players on. One, you either being dishonest to yourself, or two, the players see right through you. So you've got to keep going and keep believing. You're going to get them better, and you'll get there. And does a few wins help? Of course it does. That helps with belief and you know, morale and all them things, and reaffirms you're on the right track. But I don't think you necessarily need that. I don't. I think if you've got your own beliefs and your own processes, and as a club you believe in all that, and as a group of staff you believe in all that, then I think you do believe that it's going to come good. And that's, I can't say we've changed anything particularly.
I mean, we've chatted before on several occasions, you've chatted to others about your sort of outside interests, you know, your degree, forensic biology, psychology, you listen to podcasts, tax consultancy companies, all the rest of it. Do you look for a little seed of stimulus elsewhere? Do you wait for a little nugget to drop in your head that just maybe makes you look at a situation from a slightly different perspective?
Always. We played Lincoln just before Christmas on a Tuesday night. Storm Arwin was here. I was at Sail Sharks from 8:30 in the morning till about 3:30 in the afternoon, stood watching 6'6" blokes in shorts and a T-shirt practicing lineouts for their game against Ospreys on the Sunday and how they went about their practices. You know, and you're constantly trying to improve, trying to, like I say, get them little nuggets, get them little bits of information that you can sort of put into your own context for your own team, for your own club, in the hope that it hits home with a few of them. And I'm not ashamed to say I'm a magpie. I will steal and borrow and look for lots of different people's words of wisdom and you know, I'm saying manufacture it to our own benefit. So yes is the short answer.
And did I read somewhere that Alex Neil, your former Mansfield teammate, had come in for the odd session? Again, just to put a spare pair of eyes on the situation?
Yeah, there you go. Magpie. I phoned him up and he's obviously out of work. And I said, listen, do you want to come in? Just literally speak to whoever you want to speak to. You know, and he's torn more strips off me than anyone. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Are you mad? That kind of thing. Because one, I know is genuine and he's honest and he's coming from a good place. And two, I know that there's, you know, it helps me and it helps the football club. So I'm not ashamed to sort of, if you want to say ask for help, but ask for a fresh pair of ideas and just say, listen, I won't do that. I'd do this. And oh, maybe that's good. And obviously, it gets him out of the house at the minute. And he sees a different football club and how we work. So he might pick stuff up from us and how we go about our business as well. And that's been fine. He come to the game against Charlton. He was in the day before. Come to the game against Charlton. Then he hasn't been in the rest of the week, if you like. Because he's got other things on, you know, media stuff and what have you. So, you know, he's been a real help. He's been a good sounding board for me, and that's, I just think that's how you improve. I look at a lot of young managers. I'm not sure if you can class me as young anymore.
How old are you, David?
I don't. 41.
Oh, I'd still class that as young.
I see a lot of youngish managers who have got people who they can call upon, and I've never had that. So I just go, well, why would I not, you know, speak to someone who's managed in the Premier League, managed in the Championship, managed in the Scottish Premier League, Scottish Championship, who I trust, and that's been really helpful, I have to say.
as you do sprawl towards middle age, final question, Your Honour. Your expressive and passionate touchline behaviour has landed you in bother in the past. Do you find yourself mellowing ever so slightly? Is it a slightly easier ride for your average referee on match day?
Yes, I am mellowing. I'm sure referees at that point have just started howling, but I am. I know I am. I'm trying to work really hard at that. I am. I sit in the stand for the first half. So straight away, that's because I think I get a better view and I think I'll deliver better team talks. You know, it's something rugby coaches do. They sit there for 80 minutes, but I think it's better. You get a better overview. And then obviously the second half, I think you've got to be on the touchline more because of the substitutions and tactics and stuff like that. And it's something that I'm trying to get even better at. Don't get me wrong. Do I think I'm particularly bad? Not particularly. Do I think I'm expressive that lots of fourth officials have a problem with? Yes. But I've always been like that. So I'm not, you know, but then some fourth officials just go, well, keep your arms down. Some say, put your hands in your pockets. Some, and, you know, just that's, it is what it is. So,
literally, know, some fourth officials, working. Some fourth officials coach you to put your hands in your pockets. You've been told that.
Yeah, yeah. And I appreciate that they're trying to help me. So I just, you know, try and take their advice on board. It's not a, you know, it'd help if you put your hands in your pockets kind of thing. It's not a, you know, they're trying to help, you know. I know that you probably saw it as, well, they can't tell you to do that. The fourth officials and referees can tell you to do anything and you take it on the chin. And sometimes that's difficult when you know they're wrong, because they do get it wrong sometimes. But sometimes, most often than not, they're just trying to help you. So you take it on board and get back to concentrating on the game.
It's been a joy as always. Keep being you.
Thank you very much, Clem. Same to you.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, it's hard not to be drawn to Wigan Athletic's incredible away form. By far the best in the EFL, with two more wins on their travels in the past week. It means they have won 10 of their 12 matches away from the DW Stadium this season and dropped just 5 points. They're actually at home this coming weekend to Gillingham. They have 4 games in hand on leaders Wickham, who are just a point ahead. Wickham themselves travel to Morecambe. Crewe, David Arktell's Crewe, are heading to Cambridge. MK Dons, who are fifth, entertain Doncaster. Oxford, who are sixth, are at home to Sheffield Wednesday, who are eighth. Rotherham dropped to fourth, but do have games in hand, particularly after that midweek late postponement, are at home to Cheltenham. And it's Sunderland who've taken just 2 points from their past 9 at home to Portsmouth.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Into Sky Bet League 2, and hard to believe as he's only just celebrated his 47th birthday this week, but John Brady is already in his fourth decade in English football. He was born in Newcastle, the other one. He came to the UK from his native Australia in 1991 and, having forged a playing career in the English non-leagues, is the man Northampton Town appointed permanently in the summer to restore their fortunes. Now, I hope I've got my chronology of your life right, because I'm doing the maths and thinking you were probably 16-ish when you came over to Brentford. Would I be right, John?
Yeah, that's right. Just turned 17, really. But I came over when I was 15 on an Australian youth team tour. Was on the 17 team at the time. And we played Tottenham Hotspurs, and then we went on to go to Denmark to play in a tournament. And on the way through, a scout from Brentford said, look, you know, we'd like you to stay and come and train with us. I came back and trained and told my mum and dad I'd like to stay here. They went, no, you've got to come back and finish your schoolwork. So then I came back a couple of years later. So, yeah, that's how it transpired.
Oh, my Lord. I love life stories and trajectories. Mm. Are you saying that seed of spending all these years in England was born of a chance encounter of a Brentford scout being at a match that made you realise you were quite good and this could be a career route for you?
Yeah, that was the opportunity. And my you know, my family are quite academic, and although we're sporty, Australia is outdoors lifestyle. And you know, I was very good at cricket. I was close to the New South Wales squad for cricket at the age of 16 as well. So it was either football or cricket. And I played in the state teams, which you have to play in your state side to then get in the Australian teams for football as well, or soccer as you call it in Australia. And we came over on a tour in I think it was 1990 actually, and I was only 15 at the time, and chance meeting, and that's how the journey began for me, really.
Have you at any point over those now four decades been close to returning? Because obviously life has its hard knocks and challenges along the way. Were there moments when the lure of getting back to family beckoned?
I was very close at the age of 34. I was still at Kettering, playing at Kettering, and at 28, Clem, I saw an opportunity to start a business, because I played high level conference football and then League Two, but not at the biggest levels, you know, and I really needed to forge a future for myself. And the only thing I knew was sports. So I set up a sports company, and we did various things with it. And it grew so big, my company, that I had to tell Mark Cooper, look, I can't play full-time football anymore. And that was the future for me, and that's what I was going to do. But as that company developed, at the age of 34, it was really doing well. And then I said to Mark that, you know, I'm going to finish now. And then 8 weeks later, I got a call to go back to my hometown side and go and train with them. And that was the age of 34. And I went back to Newcastle in Australia and trained with them. And Gary Van Egmond was the manager at the time. And they only offered me a one-year deal, but it was the first time I'd been back in the summer for a long, long time. I was burnt the first day I was back there, would you believe? And they offered me a one-year deal, and to move everything and change everything for 1 year. And obviously then, you know, I was very close to Claire, who is now my wife, but wasn't my wife then. And that would have been a big pull away. So in the end, I decided not to. And it's funny how fate plays a different hand. And I came back, and I ended up playing for, which I didn't really want to, but I played part-time because I was asked to play three games for Brackley to help this manager out. And after playing those three games, I was organizing the team everywhere, helping the manager out at the time. And he went, look, my business isn't doing too well, and you're an excellent coach on the pitch. Would you like to manage this team? And I went, whoa, hold on a minute. And then I just fell into management at 34.
Wow. And all the time, the business is sitting there as well. Is that business still going as well now, John? Or did you sell it? Yeah. Or still
no,
going?
No, my business still runs. And I'm quite busy. We live on not a working farm as well. So we've got a farm, and it's I've got three children, 8, 6, and 3. And life's pretty flat out, I would say. Yeah.
And what and the sporting business, I mean, what, just give us a little flavour of what it is it actually does, the sort of key functions.
Okay, four facets to the business. I started up generally just as soccer schools for kids in the half terms, and then we developed that on to we call them advanced football coaching. So we did one in Milton Keynes on a Monday night and one on a Friday night, and I couldn't believe how popular they were. They're full straight away because I had guys that I'd played with professionally who'd gone into academies coaching that wanted to do a bit of extra coaching, and they came and worked for me. So that was our unique selling point, that we had guys that played the game, done all their badges, and we were enthusiastic, and we were developing young, talented players that were just – really good grassroots players, but not quite at academies. And we're offering that opportunity with our experience. And then I developed it into Saturday morning clubs. So we developed that. And then the final piece of the jigsaw, we went into schools. And at one stage, I had about 33 staff going into schools every day. So delivering all types of sport in schools. And that's the business in a nutshell, really.
Does that give you, as a football manager, a subjectivity that few have, in so much as if you've got a bit of income coming from elsewhere, football's not quite the epicenter, and it gives you a very different perspective to if you need to be a football manager for income?
Well, that's quite intuitive. You've said that. It took the pressure off, where management's a lot of pressure, and it allowed me to be a little bit freer with my mind and not worry about underperforming, because I always had that cushion. And it did help as well with certain players that I could that had done their badges, that I could place into schools and they could work for me, and then I wouldn't be stressing the budget out at Brackley too much, and that worked as well. I'd say it still does that it for me. I'll tell you what else it did for me, Clem. It's a humbling experience going into schools and then observing coaches, which I still did when I was at Brackley, and I haven't done since I came to be the manager at Northampton. But you know, to coach a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old and help them with their coordination, and then the behavior of the group, you know, 2 or 3 are sitting down and don't want to join in, and others are over there. And I tell you what, your behavior management skills really come on a treat, to be honest. So, yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, in this wonderful chat, we haven't even discussed the fact that obviously Brackley Town was a really successful period. Those 6 years, you won 7 trophies. But then at the end of it, you go and kind of start again, in so much as you go into the Northampton Academy and you've worked your way through the ranks there before ultimately getting the opportunity as manager. So how was that adjustment for you, from being the man in charge to kind of starting again at the development ages?
Well, again, strange how I sort of fell into it again. I'd finished at Brackley because I got to a point, Clem, where I'd played for 17 and a half years and then fell into management. And I'd done my A license and I'd done a few courses, but I still didn't feel the game had fully knitted for me, and I felt I needed to be better. So I went off on a lot of courses, a lot of detailed courses at St. George's Park. I did developing defenders, developing midfielders, developing strikers, and they were 4-day courses, but they really drilled down on detail. And then obviously Advanced Youth Awards and et cetera, and a lot of other psychology courses. And I went through those. But in the meantime, probably, 7-8 months later, the then academy manager at Northampton Town, Bobby Gould's brother, Trevor Gould, I've known Trevor for many years. He said, look, you know, we'd like you to come on board and manage the under 16 group. And I went, I'm not so sure, Trev. Look, I'll come down. I'll give it a go for a couple of weeks and see how I feel. And look, straight away, I just really, really enjoyed the group. There are a group of good players, but misfiring a little bit. And in the end, I took on that group, and probably I was 6 months into that role, and bless him, Justin Edinburgh saw me walking around the building. And Justin said to me, what are you doing here? And obviously I knew Justin throughout my playing career and when he was managing in the conference. And I went, I'm the under-16s coach. He said, no, you won't be. He said, I need you doing the youth team, mate. And I will phone you first week of May. And I thought, it was around Christmas time, I thought, we'll see. And lo and behold, Justin phones me on the first week in May. Right, you ready? And I said, mate, I run my own business, this, that, whatever. He said, well, I want you to do it. And in the end, I did it. And for four and a bit years, I was the youth team manager. And I took that group up. And the great thing about that group, we went on and had great success, won the league, played Arsenal in the third round of the FA Cup, only losing 2-0. And seven of the players signed professional contracts. And that's never been heard of. And we had a lot of debuts in the first team.
Wow. So kind of life comes full circle, doesn't it? And the skills you learned with your own coaching schools and the various strands of that suddenly has made you benefit development-wise. What I kind of love about the current Northampton Town setup is, yes, your elevation, but also Colin Calderwood coming back in the summer, who previously got the club promoted in 2006 as manager. I know Ian Sampson runs the academy. It's a proper family, John, isn't it?
It is a family. It's great affinity with the club. We all live in Northamptonshire. I've also got Mark Richards, who, you know, record goal scorer for the club. Mark's my head coach. So I was really careful and considered how we would put together a team that would connect to the fans, and how much it would mean to all the fans. And plus, I wanted just top people around me. Probably, I don't know, you do know, Colin's got way more experience than me, played at a lot higher level. But as many people would know him, he's probably the most humbling person you'd ever want to meet. And he's been brilliant throughout.
John, how do you manage the ups and downs of the club? Because if I just look at the last sort of decade-ish, I mean, obviously promoted under Chris Wilder 2016, again under Keith Curl 2020. I mean, that's a lot of highs, lows, adjustments, supporter expectation-wise, apart from the kind of infrastructure.
I was offered the opportunity to take over February 10th of last year. So it's nearly come round full circle for a year now already, and that's flown by. And obviously, first and foremost, the remit for me was just to, probably take a couple of games, the club, get the opportunity to find a manager who could make a difference to help the team stay up. And look, the start wasn't hugely great. But what it is, they saw a difference in our second game. We drew away to Ipswich. We played some good football, really pushed them pretty hard. And in the end, they then asked me to take the job to the end of the year. And then thereafter, we didn't stay up. We missed out by 3 points, but all statistics had really improved and the style of play, etc. But unfortunately, leading into your question, we were relegated, and that really hurt because I was then a massive part of it. I took over a problem, but we missed out by 3 points. We were so close. And previous to that, they hadn't won in 12 games, and we'd made a difference. Now, how do you deal with that? Yeah, it's tough to take, but what we've tried to do is, you know, as soon as we played the last game against Sunderland at the end of the season, we were in on the Monday morning trying to recruit the best players we could. And I didn't have a previous knowledge of players in League Two, and I was on a thing that they call Y Scouts, a video where you watch all the players, and I didn't have a day off through the whole summer. I worked and worked and worked tirelessly to try and put the team together. So how do I deal with it? Just through sheer hard work, galvanizing a good team around me, trying to connect to the fans, and hopefully through what we can do through our abilities, we can bounce back as soon as possible.
Have we got you for good now in England? No chance of you ever going back to Oz?
Clem, my dream was to have a face like an old leather wallet, mate. Live six months of the year in England in the sunshine and 6 months of the year in Australia. I'm probably got a very weathered face anyway, and but I love the sunshine. So, look, you know, my family are here. My wife's here. My children go to school here. And my wife is so close to her family. I've been warned off many times about going home. So I think over my dead body, I'll probably be going home, mate.
Yeah. I'm just going to have a little look. Yeah. Yeah, not too bad, actually. There's no leather walletry about that face. John, this conversation has been full of surprises and an absolute joy. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for joining us.
Brilliant. Thanks, Clem. Thank you very much.
Really sad news to finish things off this week after the passing of the former Swindon Town, Bournemouth and Portsmouth left-back Jamie Vincent at the age of just 46. He's a familiar name to many of us who follow EFL football. In an 18-year career, he played more than 500 games, also pulling on the shirts of Derby County, Millwall and Walsall. He helped Swindon to win promotion to League One in 2007, and he played in all three Football League divisions before hanging up his professional boots in 2011. I'm sure that Swindon Town will be paying tribute to him. In the early kickoff this Saturday in Sky Bet League Two, when they entertain Bristol Rovers, elsewhere, Mansfield, 9 league wins in 10, travel to Barrow. Tranmere, currently second, 7 wins in an unbeaten 9, are off to Crawley. Forest Green Rovers, the leaders, are at home to Carlisle. Newport are at Scunthorpe. Sutton United against John Brady's Northampton Town is third v fourth. And we must just give a mention as well to Stevenage. 2 wins in 3. They head to Hartlepool United. That is it for this episode. A big thank you to John Brady and David Artell. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.